This is Erica Nelson at The Body. While at the 2007 U.S. Conference on HIV and AIDS in Palm Springs, California, I attended a meeting on the Ryan White Care Act. The Ryan White Act funds HIV medical care and support for people in the U.S. who don't have health insurance or adequate insurance to cover their bills. The Ryan White Act is scheduled to be reapproved in 2009, and many people think it needs to be completely overhauled. The meeting was called a town hall meeting because it was an open forum where anyone could share their firsthand experiences with Ryan White-funded services, such as free clinics, transportation, and case management. It was the third of its kind this year, sponsored by the Campaign to End AIDS and the National Association of People with AIDS. Ryan White advocates present at the meeting planned to take the complaints and suggestions they heard back to the office of Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts, a Ryan White ally, so the input could be used to reform the act. Many people spoke at the loosely structured meeting, and we've grouped the highlights by topic for this podcast. You'll hear me pipe up occasionally to introduce the topic and the speakers. To gather more information to reform the act, listeners and readers are invited to host a Ryan White meeting of their own in their own town. For more information, contact Christine Campbell of the Campaign to End AIDS at 202-408-0305 or campbell@housingworks.org. That's CAMPBELL at housingworks.org. In this section, Michael Kink, Legislative Counsel for Housing Works, provides an incisive review of some of the problems with the Ryan White Care Act.
My name is Michael Kink. I'm Legislative Counsel for Housing Works, going between Albany, New York, and Washington. And, you know, I think it's important to talk a little bit about how we got here, why we end up with what we've got, and where did some of these problems that people are talking about come from. I think, you know, I'm going to bleed a little bit into the next part because I think it's the only way to illustrate how we got to where we got. We've got a system that was built on what was politically possible 15 years ago. We got an old car that we've been patching together and trying to make work and trying to keep on the road. I heard some guys talking this morning about they were driving in a rainstorm, and to make the windshield wipers work, like one guy, they tied it up with baling wire and they were pulling from the inside to make the windshield wipers go back and forth through the storm. That's what we're at. That's what's happening. We don't have a system that is universal. We don't have a system where everyone gets it. The money does not follow the person, right? It's not universal. It doesn't meet standards of care. When Joyce says that she went months without medication that she needed, when we hear some people get what you're supposed to get in D.C., but they don't get it in Maryland. Some people get things in Sacramento, but they don't get them in Riverside, San Bernardino. Our system does not make sure that medical standards that we know about, that were created by the experts. We know what someone's living with HIV needs. We know the medications they need. We know the primary care they need. We know the tests they should be getting. We know the platform, the foundation for care, case management, housing. We know that. Academics have studied it. We've been treating HIV for 25 years. But our system here in the United States, Ryan White, Medicaid, Medicare, this crazy quilt, does not make sure that we comply with these standards of care. It's not affordable. You work full-time, you're under the poverty level, you pay $1,300 a month for rent, you pay $300 a month in your co-pays, not for your HIV meds. There is no money for food, for kids, for child care, for transportation. I don't have to tell you the details. Some people get some things that they need. Some people get a 50% success story. I'm glad there's a 50% success story. But this is not a system that is set up to succeed and to get people what they need. It's also not accountable. If programs can take money and segregate and serve who they want to serve and blackball someone who says they're not getting what they need, the system is not accountable. It's not transparent. They work for us, right? That's what you said. This is a publicly funded system. The taxpayers are providing billions of dollars for HIV care in the United States. We are not getting the bang for the buck. You work hard, you pay taxes. People that may or may not be able to work now during times in their lives pay taxes. Our parents, our brothers, our sisters, our loved ones, everybody pays in. This is supposed to be a public system. and it is not accountable. We are not getting the bang for the buck. Now, there are structural reasons that some of these things are in place. Ryan White is a categorical program. Every year, people like Carl Schmidt have to go up to Congress and beg for money to fund the Ryan White system. Christine, Bill, other people that are in here, Nancy, everyone has to go to Congress to say, give us the money we need this year. When you talk about flat funding, right? So there's more and more and more people who are HIV positive, more and more people who are living with AIDS, and yet the money stays flat, flat, flat. In a different system like Medicare, like Medicaid, that's funded on an entitlement basis, you get the medically necessary benefits and services, and the government pays for the services that it delivers. So we don't have to go to Congress year after year to pay for the Medicaid program. We have a title that was written when Lyndon Johnson was president 50 years ago, plus, and that said, we're going to set up a system that meets the essential healthcare needs of very low-income people. We don't have that in the field of HIV. Some people are HIV positive and low-income and meet the eligibility standards in their state and it's properly. So by that time, we're here. Here's the big universe of people with HIV. Carl said Medicaid's the biggest payer for HIV care in the country. But there is a crazy quilt of eligibility standards. There's one standard in California, there's one standard in New York, there's another very much lower standard in poorer states, particularly across the South. So in many states, people have to get HIV, get a bunch of opportunistic infections, get a diagnosis of AIDS, and then you get Medicaid, right? That's Louisiana, right? But someone in New York who's very low income gets Medicaid, regardless of their disability status, regardless of their HIV status. So we can keep people healthy by providing them the standard of care earlier so no one has to get sick and then eventually get Medicaid, right? One of the policy options we talked about that's out there is the Early Treatment for HIV Act. It would expand Medicaid eligibility nationwide for everybody who's HIV positive. It would cut the AIDS death rate in half simply by getting people what they need when they need it. But we don't have that now. So what we've got is a crazy quilt of Ryan White and Medicaid and Medicare and state and local funding programs. We have clinics that are serving people that are all in the same position. Everybody needs the same meds. Everyone needs the same primary care. Everyone needs the same tests. Everyone needs the same case management services and housing. And yet, different people, even in the same agency, get different things depending on their income, depending on their eligibility, depending on how much money is there in the given year. There are waiting lists. They run out of money. Right? The dental care. Someone said, you know, we were in South Carolina. People had no dental care for 3 years, and all of a sudden they had to spend some extra money. They put people on buses and took them to dental clinics, and in one afternoon, everyone got 3 years worth of dental care. That is not an effectively managed system. And I would argue that we don't have to put up with this anymore. We don't have to put up with Ryan White anymore. We have presidential candidates in both parties that are talking about universal health coverage. We've got candidates in both parties that are saying that health care needs to be provided to everybody, it needs to be universal, it needs to be affordable. The whole thing, the story about, you know, if you were on Medicaid, you could go, you know, across the block. But if you rely on Ryan White, you have to go 50 miles, right? We have health care providers all around the country. We have 20 years of the epidemic, an ability to bring standards of care to these huge health systems that we have. I'm not a huge fan of insurance companies and HMOs, but they're there. People should be getting care from experienced HIV doctors. But HMOs and insurance companies are set up so that they could, conceivably, if we paid them the money and held them accountable, they could make sure that everyone that they were serving who was HIV positive was on the right meds, getting the right tests, seeing the right doctor, getting the right amount of services. This is not rocket science in the 21st century. There are specialized things that HIV docs can and need to do, but the basic, large scale, covering a million people living with HIV in the United States and keeping them healthy, we can do that. Right now, we don't have the political will to make that happen. The last Ryan White reauthorization set different parts of the country against each other. And the regular people with HIV and AIDS weren't informed or mobilized enough to know or to be involved in the fight. And that's why this process is starting early, so that people can go in and fight. There weren't enough people. There were some people. I'm not saying everybody. There were some people fighting and working effectively. But there were many people in the South that said, get on a bus, come to Washington, and tell people in Washington we should steal the money from the North. There were people from rural areas that said, get on a bus, come to Washington, we need to steal the money from the cities and get it to rural areas. But there weren't people all over the country saying, don't give us a pie that's not big enough for all of us. Give us a pie so that everybody can get the care they need. Give us a pie so that it's everyone, and everyone gets what they need, that it's affordable, and that we make sure that the people who are serving us are accountable to. So we have a chance to do it differently in 2009. We're going to have a president that's committed to universal health care. We're going to have a Congress that is more committed. It's not a perfect world, and it's not going to be a perfect world, but I think it can be a better world than we have now if we fight for things that we really need instead of accepting crumbs from a table that doesn't have enough to provide everybody what they need.
In the section that follows, you'll hear two HIV-positive advocates discuss challenges faced by rural and suburban areas receiving Ryan White-funded services. We'll hear first from Laureen Willenberg of Lake Elsinore, California, an outspoken activist who has been living with HIV since 1992.
My name is Laureen Willenberg, and I originally hail from a very small town called Placerville, which is a foothills community in the Sierra Nevadas. And it's located halfway between Sacramento and South Lake Tahoe. Even though I am not a native of that town, I spent 24 years there conducting my own small landscape design business. And indeed, that's where I received my HIV-positive diagnosis in 1992. I became involved in the Ryan White CARES Act because we had a local consortia that was dual county. It was El Dorado County and Alpine County, which is very far flung. Let's say from Lake Tahoe to Sacramento distance, okay? And we're very rural. We were at that time. When HRSA mandated rural consortia out of existence to place planning councils in place. For example, what happened to us is our group got disbanded and the planning council was convened then in Sacramento, which for me was a 65-mile round trip. All right. The planning council in Sacramento is still in place. It's a 45-member group. I was a member of the Sacramento Planning Council a year ago, but recently relocated to yet another rural community. So the reason I'm speaking out is because I feel that I'm a representative at large of rural communities. The one in which I'm involved in is Riverside County, and I'm finding that because of the recent remodernization or restructuring of the current Ryan White CARES Act, what has happened then is we in the rural communities have been, we consumers that is, have been left in a lurch as our case management offices are closed. Up as recently as 2 weeks ago, I heard out of 70 consumers, there are probably 10 individuals who do not own transportation. This is rural Riverside County now I'm talking about. And so in order for them to access their case management worker whose office has been closed locally, that would have been within, say, 20-minute drive where we live, now they are looking at the same thing I was looking at up north, a 75 to 90-mile round trip then to access their clinic, to access their case management worker, etc. And so I'm here this evening not necessarily to speak for myself, but for 70 individuals who are distressed, who are basically feeling left out, forgotten, cut off, all of those horror stories that might, I think, be happening on a national level in so many other rural communities that we know of. And I just wanted to immediately voice that. I'm sitting with these people in these support groups and can't seem to really get answers from the individuals seated in authority, say, you know, what are you going to do for us?
Now we'll hear from Cecily Carroll, an advocate for people with HIV at Washington Hospital Center in D.C.
I'm Cecily, and I live in Germantown, Maryland, and I work in Washington, D.C., and what I'm having issues with now is the fact that I live in Montgomery County, which they consider one of the richest counties in Maryland, and so there is no funding in Montgomery County. I moved there in 2001. The hospital list has been closed since prior to me moving there, and it still has not opened, and it's now 2007. They're not accepting any more applications. In terms of health care, if you don't have Medicaid, you don't have Medicare, you have to drive. Like I said, I live in Germantown, and the closest health department where I can get medical is in Silver Spring, which is about 20, 25 miles from where I am, which I don't think, I actually don't think is fair. I think there should be more services further north, of Silver Spring, which is actually where the health department is. And in where I work, I actually work in D.C., at a hospital, and I'm also finding that a lot of the patients that I work with are actually migrating from Maryland to D.C., where the funding is. And I don't understand that, because our EMA is, from my understanding, is Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, and D.C. So why is all the money there in D.C. and not spread throughout our entire EMA? I work full-time, but I'm still considered under the poverty level. So a lot of the services, and I do know that Ryan White is supposed to be considered, a source of last resort, okay? But folks like me who work, and I have a job, so I should be able to, which is not always the case, And folks don't see it that way. My case manager is like, okay, so what are you doing with your money? When I'm paying $1,300 a month for rent, and I'm bringing home less than $2,000 a month when you take out taxes and all that other crap, and I don't qualify for ADAP. Well, no, I do. I'm sorry. For my co-pays, I do qualify for ADAP. But, I'm on a whole lot of medicines other than HIV meds. They might cover the HIV meds. They might cover, the Lipitor that covers the cholesterol that the HIV meds is giving me. But then what happens to the rest of the stuff? My copays each month is almost $300. That's without the HIV meds.
In this section, two activists with HIV talk about accessing Ryan White-funded dental care. We'll hear first from Lorene Willenberg of Lake Elsinore, California.
Personally speaking, I benefited from I developed the gum disease, and I was uninsured. Although I was self-employed and making X amount of dollars, I couldn't afford to buy health insurance or dental insurance. And received assistance then to have the surgery on the top half. But I'll tell you something, I actually needed the surgery on the bottom half, and because of the cutbacks in Sacramento now, this was about a year and a half ago, needed to not have that because of the cap per head, if you will, consumer. And so I still have the blazing infection on the bottom and nowhere to go.
because I've heard that dental assistance is no longer available, and that several of the dentists in the area have ceased accepting people in my circumstance. So it was a success for half. It was a half success, 50% success. And I'm very appreciative of that, by the way, because had I not benefited from that surgery, my upper teeth would be gone. And so I want to say how grateful I am for those services being available. But if let go the bottom part, now that I'm in my 50s, you know, and I am HIV positive, and so I have to be concerned that the longer it goes, that I might have an infection that will eventually, you know, hurt my immune system. So there's a level of stress there. You know, it's always in the back.
Now we'll hear from Fortunata Kasege, one of the meeting's hosts. Fortunata is originally from East Africa. Now she works in Houston, Texas for the campaign to end AIDS.
The other thing is just to make sure that the dental care, you know, the drugs, assistance, you know, the rehabilitation, you know, all those other supportive services. I can talk about dental care because I come from a big city and there's thousands of people who rely on one little clinic that's there. And I know how dental health is important for people who live with HIV. You don't want to get some other crazy infections, you know, to jeopardize your already weak immune system.
Two HIV advocates in the following section discuss Ryan White-funded services for undocumented workers. The first speaker will be HIV-positive advocate and East African immigrant Fortunata Kasege of the Campaign to End AIDS in Houston, Texas.
In Houston, where I'm receiving, you know, the services, for me personally, as one individual, it's all that I rely on. The clinic that I go, because of my immigration status, I can't qualify with the Medicare, Medicaid, you know, stuff. And they told me, you know, my doctor and I was discussing on it's probably time for me to start considering the medicine. And we were talking about how it's going to get paid and, you know, everything was not, I was not qualified, and the only thing is Adam, and of course, you know, the money goes there. So this is my life. This is it. It has to be good. It has to be perfect for it to work for me and for it to be something that I put my life, you know, to rely on it.
Next up, you'll hear Carl Schmid, Director of Federal Affairs for the AIDS Institute in Washington, D.C.
I also heard about immigration status, and I think that's going to be more. We got through this reauthorization, thank God, and without it becoming an issue. And we thought, you know, with the Republican Congress, we really thought it was going to be an issue because immigration was a big, big issue. But people can access Ryan White services who are undocumented, thank God.
Right.
But they can access other services, and we have to continue. There's going to be more of a burden on Ryan White because of that.
In this section, two people living with HIV talk about how they've stood up for themselves to get the services they needed. We'll hear first from Reverend Joyce Turner Keller, who founded and runs a service agency called Aspirations Holistic Tutorial Services in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
The issue of being complacent, I had not accessed services since January. Simply because there was such a turnover in the office where the agency where I was getting service, receiving services from. And every time I would call, I would be told that you don't need it. Because somebody in the office would say, well, she got her hair done, she looks this way, it looks that way. It was more of a visual thing, and I was denied those things that I was rightly entitled to. So I did without receiving any services from January up until a month ago. And I finally just had to go in and ask for help to get meds because I found that I was living, I had pneumonia. And some of the medicines that the doctors were giving me are not in the formulary. So you suffer for a week and then you know that you can't take it any longer. And you have to bite the bullet. So I called the agency that I received services from. And for 3 days, I was told, we can't find your file. And these people are Ryan White recipients. I'm a consumer. But they assumed, because of what I look like, the way I speak, and the way I carry myself, I don't need the services I'm getting. And they made that judgment call. You talked about difficulties in receiving services when there is a need. It is considered, you know, it's inhuman that these people are employed by us. And we have to beg and grovel at their feet to get a basic need. And I think it's deplorable. So I'm definitely complaining about it.
I think that our health care should be an entitlement program. I mean, we're human beings. Everybody should be entitled to preventive health care. I mean, when I spoke to Senator Kennedy's office and the question was posed to me, what do you want? And I said to myself, I want George Bush and all of the senators' health care. I want to know that when my meds are no longer working, that the next med I need is in my formulary. I want you to save my life. That's what I want. I want universal. I want to be entitled to good, effective, efficient, affordable, accessible health care.
Next, we'll hear from Cecily Carroll, an advocate for people with HIV at Washington Hospital Center in D.C.
I don't have that problem in terms of being blackballed because I have no problem with opening up my mouth. If I know that there are services, especially the fact that our EMA is four states or whatever large, and I know that the money is there, when I go into this agency and they try and tell me, okay, you know, we don't have the funding for this and we don't have the funding for that. And mind you, I just sat back 2 weeks ago and was the same meeting that these folks were in and heard the same thing that they heard. And they try and tell me that there's no funding. I do a lot of comparison. I'm like, okay, if the folks in D.C. can get a certain amount of grocery vouchers per month, per family member or whatever, why can't we get the same thing if we're all, you know, supposed to be getting some of the same pot of money? What's the problem with that? Now, I might get in trouble for saying this, but I no longer have that problem because they don't want to hear that from me anymore. You know, not to say that they pretty much give me anything I want. I'm not going to say that. Okay? But they don't argue with me anymore. If I go in and I say, I need this, you know, in order for me not to be blackballed, okay, I go in and I say this, and this is what happens. But that's me. Everybody's not like me. Everybody else doesn't hear the same thing. Don't go to the same meetings that I go to. So they don't hear the information. So here I am, you know, trying to spread the information to as many people as I possibly can. This is the money that's out there, okay? You are eligible for this. You need to go and get it. You need to fight for it. It's there. It belongs to you. It was put there so that you can get it. You know, but a lot of people, like I said, they're not as outspoken as I am about the services that I need.
In this section, HIV advocates who helped host the Ryan White Town Hall meeting discuss how you can get involved. We'll hear first from Christine Campbell, Housing Works Director of National Advocacy.
What you can do is, one, stay connected with this process and join with us. We have your contact information. Our goal here is to take this information and feed it back to you and say back to us, no, get it right. This is what I really want you to say. The other thing is that both NAPWA and Campaign to End AIDS are organizing in all of the states. So get connected with some of the folks who are doing this. You cannot do this alone. Absolutely cannot do this alone. So we provide support for people to be able to do that. Get educated. One of the reasons we gave you the information that you have is that this is the basic stuff about what's going on in our communities. And believe it or not, you can actually start learning the policy speak. It can happen. You're going to start talking in acronyms. But being able to be educated about what's going on. The other thing we have given you is a survey. fill out the survey and get that feedback to us so we'll be able to collect concrete data as to what people are saying. This many people are actually, of the people surveyed, are actually accessing services through Medicaid. This many people have no transportation to get to their services. This many people have child care issues, and it does need to be part of the core services. This many people have nutrition issues, and it does need to be part of the core services, as well as the narratives that say, this is what we want the legislation to look like. These are our non-negotiables. And putting it that clearly, we cannot accept less. But also, use this network available to you. All of us are available to each other. Larry, Mike, Carl, who just left, but I know he's available. Bill McCall, Nancy Bernstein. All of us are resources to you. One of the things we want to emphasize that it's not about those of us who hang out on the Hill. It's about the people who are receiving services. Granted, some of it is our you who are hanging out on the Hill, and we love that, but sometimes we get it twisted that it's about Mike's advocacy that makes a difference. No, it's about you who are living with it day to day, trying to access services and making sure that those voices get heard and represented wherever we go and are reflected in the legislation.
Next up is Larry Bryant, National Field Organizer at the Campaign to End AIDS.
And the networks, the communities, the waiting rooms, when you go back home, this conversation should continue. That survey is available online. People you know that have the same issues, the same questions, or different questions, make sure that they have access to that survey. Make sure they get access to us. You know, this is just a link in the chain of conversations leading up to, you know, when we really need to be making our voices, but we can't wait until the last available minute before someone is signing, you know, an act that we, you know, feel like we've been force-fed. We have the opportunity to make our voices heard now.
Now we'll hear from Christine Campbell again.
And if you want to do one of these in your community, just let me know, and there are toolkits available, and we're willing to come to you and help you facilitate to make this happen. Yes.
And finally, we'll hear from Michael Kink, Legislative Counsel for Housing Works.
I was just going to say that the next 24 to 36 months are going to be the most intense period of concentration on health care needs for the American people in 40, 50 years. It's just going to be like in 64, 65 when they were creating Medicaid and Medicare. And if this community, our people, all of you guys are mobilized, if you can speak and bring those 70 people to reporters, to senators, to members of Congress, if our networks can work and communicate with one another, we can influence this process and we can make progress. We can achieve those goals that are up there. If everybody goes home and says, this is terrible and everything is bad and it's too complex for me, they're going to do stuff without us. They are not going to care about people with HIV and AIDS unless people with HIV and AIDS step up. They are not going to care about little providers in tough communities that don't have enough unless those providers step up. The big drug companies and the big HMOs will get everything they need. They have lavishly paid people that will go and get them what they need. But our community will only get what we need if we get in there and work and fight together. And that's why this is so important. This is the very beginning of the most important 2 or 3 years that there's ever been for AIDS.
Thank you for listening to these highlights from the Ryan White Town Hall meeting, which took place at USCA 2007. For more information about hosting your own meeting, contact Christine Campbell of the Campaign to End AIDS at 202-408-0305 or campbell@housingworks.org. That's C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at housingworks.org. You can also fill out the survey sponsored by the Campaign to End AIDS and the National Association of People with AIDS, linked from this podcast's main page.